Hey there, foreigners. This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrants. Today's guest moved to the US from China in her 20s for PhD. While doing her PhD, she was really attracted by the financial and time freedom a clinician had. So she trained to be an endodontist. After spending 8 successful years as a root canal specialist, she felt in need of an environment that changes fast. Faster than a steady clinical practice anyway. She changed her career again. She's currently the market strategist and co-host of the Relaunch podcast. She calls herself a part-time dentist, living a full life. Welcome, Dr. Pei.
Thank you so much for the introduction. Yeah, I'm honored to be part of your show and your mission to inspire immigrant entrepreneurs is very much my passion as well. So you're doing a great thing.
So looking at your background, Pei, I have to ask you, what makes you want to try new things when so many of us are worried about change?
You know what? I actually don't like change at all. I love the fact that I'm the owner of a very successful practice. I have awesome staff and, you know, I used to work only 4 days a week and still have great income. But it's just part of me. I felt like I have to explore something else. There's just something else out there that by me working 4 days a week, I cannot get there. And I think it's that desire to do something bigger, to be able to use some of my other gifts.
I see. So the desire to do something more overshadows your fear for change.
Well, there was a tug of war for, mm-hmm. you know, many years, and finally, you know, one party win, and I guess you figured out which one win.
I see. So you are saying that, did you have multiple instances in your life where you felt like taking the entrepreneurial leap, but you didn't, and you took it 8 years after your dental practice? Is that how it went?
Well, you know, I guess if you look at it, when I had the private practice, I guess I could call myself an entrepreneur as well.
Yeah.
But I think is being a true entrepreneur, I think now I understand I have to be able to grow in ways I want to grow. Unfortunately, in a way, the practice is not how I want, you know, it doesn't contribute to how I want to grow.
I see. Yeah. So I absolutely agree. Like having a practice is as entrepreneurial as having an online business. But what did you find is the biggest difference between the two, brick and mortar business versus an online business?
That's a very interesting question. I really saw lots of similarities. Frankly, for me, in the last year, working primarily with my husband in the online business, I have learned so much about how it works, how online marketing is different than the traditional local business marketing. But frankly, there's lots of things I learned about business during those 8 years of owning one that is not that much different than rent. I mean, the concept of running a business is no different. You know, you manage your finances, you understand marketing. It's just using different tools, connecting with different people. Your culture is different. But the key components, they are all the same.
Can you give us an example of how it is different?
I think, for example, in the local business, most of the time, let's say, okay, what is your You tell me what's one of the local business you shop for, either clothes or something. Give me an example.
Clothes is a good example. I go to the Macy's down
okay,
the road.
Okay. So, for example, most people know you Macy's different than Dillard's, different than JCPenney. And there's a reason, because you walk in there, you feel different. The clothesline's different. The brand's different. Although they all department stores. So local business usually have, you know, when you open the door, there is a feel. I think a lot of times online business owners, this is what they struggle with, that branding. You know, what do people feel like? Why do they enter this store? Yes, wow, the clothes or your podcast or your coaching service, but how do you make people feel? I know this is not exactly what you asked, but I think so earlier I talked about the similarities between local and online business, but the difference will be for online marketing, the tools are very different. You know, you leverage social media, you have to understand lots of conversion pixels and where to put them so you know who's visiting your site. Because for local business, you see them, you say hi, you might see them again. So
it's the branding aspect, which is completely different between local versus online.
Right. For online, you do have to spend more time understand your brand and create that look and feel for people who visit you. And also for the marketing, you have to understand the tools for online marketing, because you are not going to be able to see your customer daily like the traditional local business.
So switching gears a little bit and going back, Pei, how was it for you in the first few years after you moved to the U.S.? Take us back to that.
Sure. It was very difficult. But what's interesting, I came, I didn't think much about it. I was like, okay, here I am.
When did you come? Like what part of your life?
I was about 25 and I finished dental school back in China. But obviously I couldn't just come and practice because it's not recognized, that degree. Just like lots of medical doctors from outside the U.S., the degree is not recognized. So I pursued a PhD in basic research. That's what a lot of medical or dental students come to U.S. to study. And it was supposed to be about 4-year, maximum 5-year program. And in the beginning, everything was fine. I knew I wouldn't be able to communicate very well, but I think the hardest time was the first two years.
What was hard about it? Is it the cultural aspect?
It's I never had trouble reaching out to people, and I was kind of a leader back in China. But coming here, for a period of my time, I forgot who I was. I forgot all my gifts, all my talents. All I could see was what I didn't have. I didn't have a car. I didn't even know how to drive. I didn't know how to speak. I didn't even know how to place an order at McDonald's. I couldn't help myself, I couldn't help anybody else. And
yeah. I could so relate to that. When you are so focused on your deficiencies, you tend to forget your gifts.
Yes, absolutely. And when I was in that kind of mindset, and when you mix that with the uncertainty about the future, about what I'm going to do, am I even going to stay here? Am I going to be successful? who I know nobody. So I think I wasn't mature enough to stay my ground and say everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. So one of the things you mentioned in another interview was that you had trouble with accent.
Oh, even, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then your accent is very neutral now. So why did you feel the need to, work on it? And how did you do
Well, I think for me, I was very conscious about just about anything, about not just my accent, but what I say, how I do certain things, because I don't know if this is what this culture, I wouldn't use the word accept, but I don't know in what situation people say what kind of things. And there's lots of movies they're talking about I had no clue about. They're talking about the games. They're talking about the movie star who I know nothing about. I didn't really work so hard on the accent, but it's kind of just came naturally. I guess I speak all the time, and I don't even have many friends from China. So I guess I was forced to speak directly to Americans.
Later on, when you started your dental practice, what moving from a student to owning your own practice is a big leap.
Right.
And what status were you in before, and how did you own your dental practice on, I'm guessing you must be on a F1 visa when you were studying, right? How did you use that and own the dental practice?
Okay, so there are quite a few years in between that. So in the third year of my PhD study, I had an awesome mentor. She pushed, I'm not kidding you. She pushed me took me to leadership positions, taught me how to give awesome presentations in national, international events. And she asked me, what do you want? And I was like, I don't know. And, and for months I was like, what should I do? So finally one day I said, you know what? I think this being a root canal specialist is really cool. I was good at it before I left China, and it's something it's a skill I always had, and I'm thinking I could pursue that. So she's the one that actually connected me with the department director. So I studied 3 more years, total 6 years, combining my PhD and my residency, and finish all that. And it was actually 2 years working for someone before I started owning my own practice. So it was quite a process.
I see. So when you moved from PhD to getting trained to become an endodontist, how did it feel to scrap everything that you did so far and then move on to what you previously were doing?
Oh, it was difficult. You really want to know?
Absolutely.
So this was interesting. I had many choices. I had a choice of staying, even after the study, staying full-time in academics, meaning I teach part-time basic and part-time in my clinical work. I had a choice of teaching in basic only and work practice part-time. I also had a choice of practice part-time and teach clinical work part-time. And frankly, it was so, I was young, I didn't know how to make decisions. I wrote down the pros and cons of lots of things, and finally, I decided, you know what? I don't think I'm going to be good if I split up my time and doing so many different things. Because especially with research, if you want to be really rise to the top and get a grant as a scientist, you really have to devote.
So you felt like you couldn't do justice to your PhD while being a clinician.
Right, right. And to be honest with you, another part of it was I felt like being a scientist, study and research is not really me. I felt it was so, it's so too slow for me to really, from study to publish a paper and to present. That process to me is too slow. And I enjoy direct contact with people more than just study things under the microscope. Yeah. So, now if I make decisions now, I possibly would focus more on following my heart, what feels right, then, okay, write down 100 pros and cons and then drive myself crazy.
Yeah, okay. So along the story, you mentioned the word mentor, right?
Yes.
And from your website, I also see that you worked with several life coaches in your life. So you had 5 of them, to be precise. So how did other people help you in all your decisions, whether it is the mentor who helped you with being an endodontist or all the other life coaches who helped you later on?
Right. The time when you saw that website, I have 5 life coaches, but ever since then I hired quite a few business coaches too. So I enjoy mentorship from others, and that mentor doing my PhD, she's very instrumental for my growth. She's extremely tough. I was frightened to see her every time, but she definitely took me to where I wanted to go. And even today, I really truly appreciate her. Now, later on, I didn't really have any life or business coaches during my practice, because looking back, I felt like I'm really good with business. There's lots of good instinct I have. And I didn't think much about it then. But looking back, I ran a very great local business at the time. But later, when I feel like this change is coming, when I feel like there's this pressure to stay where I am, but then there's another part of the world I want to explore. That's when I start hiring life coaches to help me figure out what's going on with me. Is this normal? Am I just hormonal? What is it? You know?
I definitely want to point that out, right? So for all the listeners, invest in a coach, you know? So they will help you cut down years of trying to figure it out by yourself, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Don't you agree, Faye?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know you can, this day and age, you can buy online programs or learn webinars, but I truly believe the power of one-on-one coaching. I like group coaching too, but one-on-one coaching is really powerful too. I think if I track the time I grew the most is when I have a coach that either, it doesn't matter what they try to help me work on, but they guide me through and also they kind of put that accountability on me.
Yeah, and that's very important. What's a good plan without following through it anyway, right?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And there was only one coach I didn't enjoy. I didn't really hire her. It kind of came as part of the program. and we decided not to work with her after a while. She felt like there's something we need to work on. So she bring her program and want us to work on instead of focusing on what we want to work on. So, but everybody else has been fantastic. Yeah.
So just to give a perspective for the listeners, how much did you spend for a very good coach, life coach, for example, who helped you probably make many more times in return, but what is okay?
Okay. Well, for life coach, I think in the beginning, 6 sessions, I paid over $1,000 for, you know, 6 meetings. That was kind of average. And the most expensive I paid is $1,000 an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty steep. Yeah, I've invested in coaches as well. And I have also had short-term coaching for an hour or two at a very high price like you did. But I must say, all of the times, it I made many times over.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I know that you've been working on this radio show called Dentist Happy Hour. Can you tell me a little bit, can you tell the listeners a little bit about the show itself and give us an update on how it's coming along so far?
Thank you for asking. That particular show, I actually plan to launch in September, and it could be sooner. But over the last year, I've been working on this show with my husband, the relaunch show, to mainly is to help people actually become known in their niche, especially for people maybe about 40 plus age that they want to transition to do something in the line of coaching or writing a book or start podcasting. But they, you know, there's so many content out there. And so the show my husband and I are doing is focusing on helping people who create content to become known. But my idea didn't come until just a few months ago, to be honest with you. But what's interesting is for the last few years, I've been wanting to contribute to dentists, to want to help them to actually be their leadership and lifestyle coach for a long time. And I just never actually put that dream as a priority until now. And what's interesting earlier when you talk about coach, one of the coaches challenged me to do that. And I got upset because it was scary. I felt like, do I really know enough? So, but my husband, who's the founder of the Relaunch Show, and he's been pushing me like, he's kind of one of my crazy coaches too. So,
okay.
Yes, that show will launch. It's about helping dentists overall have a happier life by having feel better about their practice and feel better about their health and finances.
Is that show being aired in Chinese also, you said?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I actually plan to have it translated, and I don't quite know exactly how I'm going to take it to China, but I know I can. So because that's where I came from, and I know I can make a huge impact to dentists over there, which is a growing market compared to when I just came.
Good luck with your show.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So coming back to your current show, the relaunch show, were you involved in the show right from the beginning, or did you start off in between after the show was launched? And what exactly is your role in the show? from being a co-host. Which I know, of course. So.
Sure. Very interesting. My husband, he was a broadcaster even when he was in his 20s. He was in traditional radio, traditional TV, and then he became a life coach. So he was doing podcasts on his own, just once a week, with his sometimes with his clients, sometimes with some experts. And then last year, we felt like, you know what, we can do a show together, because we start speaking together for a couple years. And so that's, yeah, I was involved from the very beginning. And for him, he's creative. He's great at booking guests and getting super good content for the show. And me, I love the part of online marketing and promotion and helping him in that way.
Yeah, I listen to your show every week, and it's a great show. You guys, all the listeners out there, should check it out too. It's the Relaunch show.
Thank you.
Yeah. So how did you, with the Relaunch show, how did you differentiate yourself in such a crowded podcast space? Right? There are so many podcasts out there, and even more so in the last year. How did you differentiate yourself, you would say?
I think there are a few things, key things we done well. One is actually, this is totally my husband Joel's work. He figured out a way to launch the podcast to number one. So we just like, because he was able to get his book to Amazon number one, he used the same method to get our podcast to number one. And that creates lots of, people recognize it. And then after that, I think the key is we continue to refine, to understand the need of our target market, our target customer. It's not perfect, because we did have to tweak a couple times. If you listen to episode one, and then you listen to 40, you listen to 100, and now the intros are even different.
Yeah, but it's a very dramatic intro, right? NPR style. I like it.
So we, you know, it's a continual learning process, learning directly from our listener what they really want.
Yeah, so when you say tweak, right, oftentimes what it takes, I hear from people, is that only a slight reorientation to get it right. Is that what happened in your case also?
Most of the time is small tweak. Yeah, yeah. Occasionally, we feel like, I think this last month, because it was our 1 year anniversary, we took a little bigger leap at that time. This has been a very interesting journey. You constantly want to know, am I serving this target audience in a way they want? But also, you constantly ask yourself, is this me? Am I running this in a way that's authentic and true to what I want to do and how I want to do it? So, and we change, people change.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys, you keep evolving the show along with yourself.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Well said.
Nice. Great to hear. So, are you still practicing dentistry part-time? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah. So how do you manage all of this together? You know, you are the co-host, you do the marketing for your show, and you are practicing dentistry. How do you do it all?
Very good question. I still, sometimes I do struggle too. But what the blessing of when you have such a busy work, and then you want to do something else, no matter, sometimes I feel like the lack of time is a blessing, because then you really focus, you're more intentional with what you do. And for me, it was very difficult for me to delegate things to for other people, because I'm the perfectionist. I do everything better than anybody else, which is not true. But I held on to that belief until it hurt so bad. So I recorded like 20 tutorials for our assistant. And so now the time I'm involved in recording is just the recording part. And then the rest of it, the majority of work is done by the assistant. And we create a very nice flow, workflow. And because, you know, now we record, we have 3 shows a week, but we used to do 6 shows a week.
Wow.
Right. And so, but now I want to achieve is I want to have the most of the time learning and working on our business rather than creating things.
Yeah. So I know you're passionate about, you know, productivity and systems in general.
Yes.
Right? So, keep going. So any tip you want to give our listeners on how to, you know, what do you mean by productivity systems and how do you use it?
Okay. So something, when we talk about productivity, we first have to look at, okay, if we have a list of things to do in order for something to be accomplished, then take that list of things and look at what, you know, before you try to want to be productive or systemize, look at what need to be actually eliminated. So not everything you have to do, only do the core essentials. And then if you make a list of things that has to be there, then the next thing I look at is there a tool out there, online tool out there, I can automate certain process. And so we use some automation tools, quite a few, my goodness. I constantly look for ways to...
Yeah, anything particular that you want to highlight for the listeners?
There is, let's see, if any of you are content creators, I really leverage Twitter and use the tool called Social Oomph. It's almost like Hootsuite, but it does something more than Hootsuite.
To schedule
out my social media postings. Yeah, and
so it will help you batch all the postings.
Right.
I see. Okay.
Right. And that's just one of them. I know I use a managed Flutter to follow people who I want to follow. And there are some other tools that, webinar tools. So I look for automation tools. And then if there's no such a thing, and if there's no tools out there, then the next thing is, delegate to see what my assistant can do. What are the things that's repetitive that, because I absolutely hate repetitive tasks. I like to learn new things. Once I learn it, I don't want to do it anymore.
So I think we are almost at time here. I hate to do this, but is there any book that you would recommend for the listeners that has caught your attention in the recent times?
You know, I read a ton of books, but there's one book I absolutely think your listener should read. It's a little deep. Sometimes you might find it hard to read, but it's written by a rabbi, actually, and I'm not Jewish.
Can you repeat that? Sorry?
It's written by a rabbi.
Written by a rabbi. Okay.
Yeah. I'm not Jewish, but this book really has taught me a lot about money, and because it's called Thou Shalt Prosper. Yeah. Yeah. So what's interesting is if you want to make lots of money, but if you think deep down spiritually, you think money is evil, then you are not going to make money. So he was in the very first chapter, he teaches people on why a lot of people think money is evil. So again, you are not going to get what you want. You're going to get what you believe. So if you don't believe money is good, then you are not going to make any.
Great talk, Pei. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much. You're doing a great thing.
Thanks for joining today, guys. All the show notes with the links mentioned can be found at breakingtheborders.com/session1. Make sure you subscribe while you're there. And also, please leave an honest iTunes rating and review. Thank you, and I'll see you another day.